Hey, if you're enjoying this show, consider supporting us on our Patreon. You can get cool perks like access to these episodes a week before they go public, and you can pick an album for us to review. Any support is greatly appreciated, so if you feel inclined, go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. Hey there, it's Jeremy. I just want to say a few words before we get into the episode here. You are going to notice a bit of a shift in this episode. I've been doing some research and looking into things, and apparently we've been living a bit dangerously in terms of including clips of songs in the podcast episode. I thought that by including a clip of the song, that would fall under fair use. And you could still make the argument that it does fall under fair use. However, you could also make the argument that it doesn't. And neither John nor I have the money to pay for music licenses, or two, pay for lawyers in case somebody comes after us, with a lawsuit or whatever. So moving forward, we unfortunately will no longer be able to include clips of songs inside of the episode. To cover ourselves and to make sure we're not breaking any copyright laws or anything like that. It's an unfortunate thing that we have to do, but I know the episodes would be a lot better if we could include the music clips in the episode, but unfortunately, we don't want to get into trouble just in case that's not, in case a record company or an artist could come after us. The episodes that we've done so far will remain on, they will remain available, and if somebody, does come after us, we will deal with it when that comes. But moving forward, we will not be able to include song clips in the episode. So what I would encourage you to do is queue up the album in your streaming service, or if you have it on CD or vinyl or something like that, however you can listen to the album. I would encourage you to listen to the album along with us. Pause the episode and, listen to the songs how we do and, just follow along and listen that way. If that's something you're interested in, that's cool. You can do it that way. I would strongly encourage you to do that because that would be a cool way to give you some context. But unfortunately, we can't embed the music clips in the episode. So we've just included a little piece of music just to kind of break things up a little bit. So moving forward, that's how the episodes will be. Thank you for understanding and hope you continue to listen. Okay, here's now on to the episode.
You're listening to Polyphonic Press, a podcast for music lovers. Join your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke, as they take a deep dive into a classic album and analyze it track by track.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And basically, if you don't know how the show works, we have no idea what album we're going to be listening to. We're going in completely blind, so I have it queued up, and we're going to hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to listen to is The Ramones' self-titled debut album, The Ramones.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so this is their debut album, released in on April 23rd, 1976. 1976 by Sire Records. After Hit Parade editor Lisa Robinson saw the band at a gig in New York City, she wrote about them in an article and contacted Danny Fields, insisting that he be their manager. The album cover, photographed by punk magazine's Roberta Bailey, features the four members leaning against a brick wall in New York City. The record company paid only $125 for the photo, which has since become one of the most imitated album covers of all time. Some of the themes on the album include violence, drug use, relationship issues, humor, and Nazism were prominent in the album's lyrics. The album opens with Blitzkrieg Bop, which is among the band's most recognized songs. Most of the album's tracks are up-tempo, with many songs measuring at well over 160 beats per minute. That's fast. Well, if you don't know how to play well, just play loud and fast. And that'll get the job done. This is a pretty short album. It's only 29 minutes. So there's 14 songs, but it's only 29 minutes. Some of the songs are a minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's loud and fast. So cool. All right, so it starts off with Blitzkrieg Bop, which I think if you know one Ramon song, this is the song that you know.
Yeah.
Here we go. Here's Blitzkrieg Bop. Cool. Short and punchy.
Yep.
I always liked that song, and one of the things I always liked about it is sort of the breakdown in the middle. When they're chanting the "Hey ho, let's go," and it's just the drums, and then the bass starts,
yep,
and then the guitars kick in. I love when songs have that slow build kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I always like that kind of that. I always liked it when the instruments are coming in, you know, one at a time like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
I gotta say, the band actually sounds pretty tight.
They do.
There's not a lot of slop going on. I mean, it's not complicated, but they're, you know, definitely playing as a solid unit. So
yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I mean, they seem to be all kind of locked in with each other. And a lot of that is, I think that it is because the music that they are playing is simple. And then, you know, that's not to put them down. I think a lot of bands get caught up in trying to play well and trying to play complex stuff. But I think maybe the takeaway is get good at playing simply and then start to get a little more complex.
Mm-hmm. I know this band, you know, they grew as musicians. I noticed when you were looking for this one, I saw the album they put out in the early 90s, which was like a whole bunch of like psychedelic covers and stuff like that, which is it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. The songs that they're playing on that are more complex, and they do it well.
Yeah,
so
you know, I can't remember what I was gonna say. Yeah, no, I mean, they definitely developed as musicians. But you have to put it into context too. In 1976, I know we've talked about it a little bit, you know, in the last few episodes, but at the time when this came out, this rock and roll had become a little bloated at the time.
Yeah.
You know, prog rock had kind of overstayed its welcome a little bit. And this was something fresh, not necessarily fresh. It was back to basics, and I think people were wanting something that was a little more accessible,
stripped down,
but also had an edge to it as well. I mean, this this isn't, you know, Debbie Boone or anything like that.
No, definitely not.
No. Yeah, I mean, and this song is, at the time, it was, this album would have been considered, I guess, underground, but it's, this song has gone on to be, you know, it's part of the lexicon of music. I mean, it's, I would say Blitzkrieg Bop is as iconic as Bohemian Rhapsody.
Probably. It's, Yeah, I would say so. I mean, they definitely started out under, well, you know, most bands start out underground-ish. Unless, of course, they're like manufactured to be sellier.
Mm-hmm.
Which these guys were not. They just showed up and with no budget, put it out, and people went, ooh. So, yeah, and of course, yeah. Like, it's classic. It's yeah. It's as big as most things ever get to be, so.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll talk about it a bit when we move along. I was going to talk a bit about the dynamics of the band, but I want to get into the rest of the album as well. So the next song, I think this is a song I know as well. I'm pretty sure I've heard it. This is I'm recognizing a lot of the songs that I didn't realize all of these songs were on their debut album. The next song is called Beat on the Brat. Happy, cheery song about violence in the streets.
I thought it was about an excessive form of corporal punishment.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's about, like, police beating, you know, protesters with sticks, I think. So, one of the things about the Ramones... I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about seeing the Ramones at a club in New York City, probably CBGB's, and talking about the first time they saw, or about halfway through the show, they hated it because it's like, are they really going to play another, you know, minute and a half song with three chords with the, that sounds exactly the same? And then by the end of it, it's like, well, of course they're going to play another one. And it's like, because that's who they are. That's what they do. And it's, and by the end, they loved the show and they loved it. They loved because they weren't trying to pretend to be something that they weren't. Even if it was the same kind of thing over and over again, it was them, and they were, you know, they were being authentic.
Yeah, and the songs, they don't sound exactly the same. I mean, they're definitely, there's a trend. I mean, yes, there's definitely a thing that they know that they're good at, and they certainly weren't at the point of moving beyond that at this point in their career. No. But yeah, that's kind of fun. I mean, it's quintessentially punk. I mean, this mm-hmm. is kind of the stuff that you think of when the term punk comes up. You think this sound. It's kind of been, I want to say the prototype. It's the archetype. So
I agree. It's you know, we talk about like the Stooges and the MC5 and then like the sort of the harder garage rock bands from the 60s mm-hmm. being the proto-punk era.
The Monks, and the ones from the USGIs from who stationed in Germany are the ones I'm talking about there.
All those kinds of bands who kind of, you could call it punk rock, but it was, 10 years later when this is starting to happen, it's sort of like those bands were kind of, was like the Wild West, and then like the typical mid-70s bands like the Ramones, Sex Pistols, the Clash, and all the CBGB bands and all those kind of things sort of took all of that and sort of laser focused it and sort of said, okay, this is what punk rock is.
Yeah, it became a a definable genre.
Yeah.
And was given a name. I mean, I think...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the MC5 were the first band that were labeled punk. And I think they sort of gave it to themselves because people called them punks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it became a trend, like an actual genre on itself, and sounded a little different than what the MZ5 had put forward.
But so. Not that different.
No, not that different.
You know,
it took a studio mistake with the Back in the USA album for the MZ5 before they sounded like a typical punk band, because they were a very and that album became very influential to punk bands both on both sides of the ocean. Mm-hmm. Partly because of that sort of tiny roar in quotation sound that was a studio mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't the it was mastered too high or something?
I don't remember exactly what they did with the master. I mean, it sounds all right. It took me a little while to get into it, because it was it did sound so different than their live stuff. Their live stuff is very I would say high energy, but like high fit. It's loud.
Like, it's kind of distorted. It's like pushing the limit to what the tape can handle, right?
Like,
didn't they mix it too high or something? There was something, yeah.
It might be, but I know in the studio, yeah, it seems to be a lot of the low end was taken out of it. Because it was definitely this, it was not a tiny roar when they go on stage, or went on stage. Yeah, it was, and of course, I can't think of their names. Wayne Kramer didn't shy away from doing guitar solos, and he was one hell of a guitar player. But yeah, that became sort of a thing, a big no-no in punk later on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for a while. So I wonder if a lot of punk rock is, especially not so much in the mid-70s, but when you get into the 80s, when like after Sid Vicious died, punk kind of became more of an underground thing, and the punk in the 80s was much more do-it-yourself kind of stuff, and there was like little pockets of communities, and they didn't really have any expectation of being a famous band.
No.
Because, you know, punk wasn't popular at that time, so it's like, well, we're just going to do it because we love it.
Well, new wave had sort of taken over. It was supposed to be the approachable punk.
Yeah, but even after new wave, when you get into the like the more the synth pop of the 80s, even further away from punk rock, you know, it felt more. It was more of a more of a, you know, anybody can do this kind of thing.
Right.
And I wonder if bands like the Ramones and the punk rock bands of the 70s kind of took that, maybe heard stuff like the MC5 and said, well, we can do that.
Mm.
And I wonder if that was sort of the progression of, we can't play like Yes, but I bet you we can play like the MC5 and play a few chords and play them really loud, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
And not only that, especially as punk progressed, they were allowed to experiment beyond what was, you know, built beyond the Ramones, rigid archetype that they were.
Well, I mean,
expected to be in the 70s.
Yeah, you kind of have to. I mean,
yeah,
you either grow as an artist or you stop doing what you're doing. I mean, you can't, because, you know, trends come and go. I mean, you have to I'm not saying you have to keep up with the times, but you have to, you can't keep doing the same thing over and over again.
Right.
You know, you'll get bored and your audience will get bored.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, it's only natural that they would, you know, it's funny. You talk about, this just reminded me, this is kind of related, but, you talked about how guitar solos were a no-no in punk rock, but so the Police were a punk band in disguise because they were, you know, like 5 years older than the other punk bands. Mm-hmm. And Stuart Copeland was in a progressive rock band called Curved Air.
Right.
And I think Andy Summers was like a jazz guitar player. Mm-hmm. Sting, I don't think he had any formal training, but he was, you know, he could play his bass well. But they were on tour. I don't know if they were actually toured with the Clash, but they were, you know, playing the same show or on the same bill or something where they were playing, with the Clash. And, you know, they were, I think it was Joe Strummer. Went up to Andy Summers and was getting him to show him some stuff on the guitar, but it was like a secret. He didn't want anyone to know that he was getting better at his music, at his instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. It's, I think a lot of musicians were sort of practicing in secret.
Yeah. 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 Well, and the other thing, it's also a tribal thing that happens, especially when you're younger.
Yeah.
There was, do you know, you might have seen some of his interviews. Have you ever heard of Jonesy's Jukebox?
I think so.
It's, I can't remember his first name. It's the guy, the guitar player from the Sex Pistols.
Oh, okay.
But he has a radio show where he interviews a whole bunch of musicians, and he had Steve Perry from Journey on, and he said he had to hide his Journey records because it was like the most uncool thing that you could have as the guitar player for the Sex Pistols.
Right.
He actually really loved them.
Yes.
You know, so I thought that was kind of funny. It's like you have to, you know, kind of be secret about the kind of music you're in. But when you get older, that kind of stuff doesn't really matter anymore.
Of course. I heard that I can't even think of it. Johnny Rotten was actually a closet Pink Floyd fan.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, yeah, how he got, you know, the story of how he got the job as the front man for the Sex Pistols.
I'm not 100% sure. No.
So the Sex Pistols weren't really a band. They were put together by a manager named Malcolm McLaren.
Okay.
And he auditioned to be the lead singer, and he had a Pink Floyd t-shirt, but he wrote on it in marker above Pink Floyd, "I hate Pink Floyd."
That's hysterical.
Yeah. So that's how he got the job. So I guess he had the right attitude.
The right attitude. No, it wasn't because of his singing ability. It was not the point. But no one could say that he was a great singer.
No. But, you know, he wasn't trying to be.
No. It wasn't the point.
No. No. Anyway, we've got quite a few songs to get through because they're all short, so I don't want to waste too much more time. So let's get into the third song. It's called Judy is a Punk. You know, one thing I noticed about these songs is if you took the guitar, the heavy guitars away, and you just turn down the distortion, you could easily place these songs in like a 60s pop kind of setting. Like, they're really catchy.
Yeah.
And really simple.
Probably have maybe a different song or singers because they sound very punk, their voices.
Yeah.
But yes. But yeah, no, it's true. The melodies that they're singing are actually very, they're more Yeah, very 60s pop, but a little more intricate than, you know, what they're playing with the guitar. Just a little, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not actually bad songs or anything. They're very short. Some of them could stand a few more verses in there. But, you know.
Yeah. But I think at this point, like, because I think the point was to make them as short as possible because, you know, they didn't want to have the, you know, 7-minute epic rock songs. It was like, no, we're just going to make them as short as we can make them. You know,
they're meant to hit you like a punch as opposed to, you know, psychological torture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's just like, well, if listening to music is going to be painful, I'll make it short.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you rather die by, you know, getting shot in the head, or would you rather, you know,
Chinese water torture?
What? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Short and sweet, or drip, long and painful?
Drip. Drip.
Yeah.
Drip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, this Yes album's going on a little bit longer than I really want it to.
Yeah.
Not to crap on Yes. I actually really like Yes. Yeah.
That's basically what it is. Yep. No, that's the point. You know, they wanted, you know, just anything. I think it was just anything different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, let's go quickly to the next song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called "I Want to Be Your Boyfriend." So far, that was the most 60s sounding song.
I gotta say, this was an expression of their more sensitive side, evident by the fact that they slowed it down to half the speed of all the other songs on the album.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to have a ballad on this one. And this is their version of a ballad.
Yeah, this is, they probably started playing at the regular speed. I want to be a banana, more sensitive, slower.
Good.
That'll do.
Yeah. Yeah. There was actually a little more intricate guitar work on that one. I don't think they were playing, it sounded like a 12 string.
I don't think so.
But I don't think it was. I think it was just a clean tone.
A little.
Yeah, I like that song. But it was a little bit unexpected. I wasn't expecting something quite like that kind of jangly pop. But yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they got to do something a little different on the album. So, you know.
Yeah. One of the things that occurred to me, I did watch a part of a documentary on the Ramones maybe a month ago. And apparently Joey Ramone, the singer, had a lot of problems when he was a kid.
Like health problems?
Health problems and developmental problems.
Oh.
I think, I don't know if he might be autistic.
That's not impossible.
Or maybe he just was late bloomer. But he had a lot of, I think he had a lot of social problems when he was a kid, and he was, some physical problems as well. Like he was really tall.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what it was, but anyway, it's funny because, apparently through the whole time, they didn't really get along.
They were mostly you know, brothers, and a lot of brothers have tiffs, especially when yep. they're in a band together.
But they're not really brothers, though.
No, okay. I don't know that much about them.
So, do you know where they got their name from? Is actually from Paul McCartney.
Okay.
So when the Beatles were touring, like so the Beatles at one point were the backup band for, I guess this guy had a bunch of singers, like he managed a bunch of singers,
okay,
and like rock and roll singers in England. This is the guy they were trying this out, and it was it was a money grab, basically.
Of course.
And it was, this is in the Beatles anthology documentary talking about how they were disappointed with the guy's name, because all the singers were like like Ricky Danger and all these tough names, and they ended up with a guy named Johnny Gentle. And they, for that tour, they all decided to change their names. So John Lennon was Long John Silver. George Harrison was Carl Harrison because he liked Carl Perkins.
Okay.
And Paul changed his name to Paul Ramone because he thought it sounded exotic in French. So that's where the Ramones comes from.
Interesting.
That's how they got their name. Yeah.
That's pretty, that's some underground trivia stuff there for a punk band. That's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where they got their name. And so they all decided to change their name to, well, Joey Ramone. But they're not really related.
Okay.
Joey Ramone's real name. What are their real names? Joey Ramone's real name is Jeffrey Hyman.
Okay.
Johnny Ramone is the guitar player. His name is John Cummings. Yeah, so they're all, you know,
regular.
And they all have changed members. So every member that has come into the band has
taken over the name.
Taken something Ramone, so.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. No, I was not really all that knowledgeable on that. So, but still, a lot of bands have problems with staying, you know, friendly to each other. Well,
and this is how I guess socially inept they are, or they were, is like one of their first shows, they're fighting on stage about what song they're going to do next. Like they're actually like yelling at each other about what song they want to do.
Why next. Does it matter? Two minutes later, they're going to have to pick another one anyway. They might as well play whatever they.
Yeah.
They might as well just shout out a song, even if they do it. You know, the same song twice in a night. I don't think anybody's going to notice.
No, exactly.
They might even like it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little silly.
Yeah. But, you know, they're young and don't know any better. Yeah. But I just think it's funny that, you know, from day one, they didn't get along with each other, but they still kept going.
Anyway,
the next song is called Chainsaw. So here we go.
All right.
So that was the noise at the beginning. I had to turn it down. That was screeching. One of the things that I noticed that that contributes to their sound, and I never noticed this before, is all the vocals are double tracked, but they're not really lined up.
Mm.
They're kind of sloppily put together. I think it's because Joey doesn't really sing the song the same way twice. But it, it, it's still, you know, it gives it,
it gives it a life.
It gives it a life. It gives it like, I don't know. It's just a unique thing to their sound. It's not, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Nope. It's just, it's a, something that, that's unique. And really, I mean, I don't think, because the songs are simple, I don't think the vocals really needed to be doubled, but, it's, it just, you know, it's, it works. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I've mentioned this, before, is that, if you're going to do double tracking, in fact, the way that double tracking works is because the two tracks are not identical. If the two tracks were absolutely identical, it wouldn't sound like double tracking. It would just sound, I mean, you might as well just double the one track you took and do it, and it wouldn't make any difference. Why would you do that?
I but a lot of the times double tracking is done and the singer will sing it mostly the same way and just give it more, I guess, more of a chorus effect.
Yeah.
But this is like, he's like starting words in different places on the two tracks.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's, you can always tell when it's double tracked, but this is like, it's not exactly lined up, you know, it's, you know what I mean? It's like, it's sloppily done, but it's still cool.
Yeah. No, I always thought it was just maybe one of the other members in the back sort of like singing along, but if it's just Joey, singing with himself sort of, but yeah, it definitely sounds almost like he's doing like a second part in the background, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely its own thing. It's again, it's not a problem. It's just,
no,
where else are you going to hear something like that?
Yeah, exactly. But I want to, this is the song that I'm interested in most, because it's has the, I think, the funniest title. Now I Want to Sniff Some Glue.
These almost sound like,
oh, sorry, what were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, is that it almost sounds like these are just like different ideas coming, like, especially with considering how short the songs are. It's like,
yeah,
this ADD kid or something like that, and he's like, I want to do this now. Okay, now I'm gonna go do this, and now I'm gonna go sniff some glue.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Kind of feels like that. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's just me
bouncing all over the place. Yeah. All right, here we go. Yeah.
Mm.
They're getting a little musical there with the different parts, the different riffs.
Yeah.
I like the song. I thought it was funny. I mean,
yeah, it's amusing.
Yeah.
They're not meant to be taken too seriously.
No.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't really know what else to say about it. I mean, it's just, it's fun. And I bet their shows were fun too. I would have liked to have seen them live,
you know, when they're not trying to kill each other on stage because they can't decide what song to play. But
well, yeah,
yeah, I'm sure it would have been quite fun.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right. I think they're just kind of, any idea that comes to their mind, they're, oh, let's write a song about that, and it's, you know, a minute long.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, let's I don't have much else to say about that song. Unless you are
good.
All right. So let's move on to the next one. It's called I Don't Want to Go Down to the Basement. Yeah. I think that one, I don't know if you got in my head a little bit, but it definitely, it sounds like they just kind of came up with it on the spot.
Yeah.
you know, they just like, well, let's just start playing and hit record and, oh, let's put that on the album.
Yeah, this is like, what's something you want to do? What's something you don't want to do? Yeah. What's something you want to do? I want to sniff some glue. What do you not want to do? Go down to the basement. The
basement.
Could be. I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't there in person, so.
No. But, it, you know, it sounds that way.
Yeah, it does.
It's whatever. It's cool. I like that this... It's maybe... I don't know how to say that... I got in my head that it was all the songs would sound exactly the same and it was just the chords. But they're a little more complex than I actually thought. And they're actually, I thought they developed more as musicians further down, further down in their career.
I mean, but, they did.
And they did, yeah. Absolutely. But I didn't, these songs are, I'm kind of surprised that these songs are a little more complex than I thought they would have been. They're all still right. Not, you know,
no.
Complex.
Yeah, but. I don't know. It's not really veering that way from what I expected for me personally, no. but that's not a problem either. I mean,
no,
it's fun, so I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I guess we're at the halfway mark.
We are at the halfway mark. I think that's the end of the first side, actually. And so the next song, we've got, what, 7 more to go. That was, by the way, that was the longest song on the album at 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
Oh.
That was their epic.
Yes.
So the next song is called Loudmouth. Cool. Oh. Now that's a song that sounded exactly like I was expecting.
Yeah. It sounded like they probably did play that one a little bit longer, but they faded it out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, it can't take up too much time.
No, of course not.
No.
It's like, well, this one's getting too close to 3 minutes for my comfort, so better, you know, cut at least, you know, 30 of those seconds off.
Exactly. And I'm starting to see what, whoever that was, I'm starting to see what they were talking about. It's like, yeah, of course. It's another song that sounds like this, you know, it's like, yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
I mean, sometimes you're just in the mood for something like this. Why the heck not?
Yeah. But you know, it's they're one of those bands, like nobody else sounds like them and they don't sound like anybody else. It's like AC/DC.
Right.
People complain about AC/DC and all their songs sound the same. It's like, yeah, but they don't sound like anybody else.
Right.
You know, when you hear an AC/DC song come on, you know it's them. And it's the same thing with the Ramones. Maybe they have a certain sound, but they only sound like them.
Right. Well, I heard, what was it? I think it was an interview with Angus Young or something like that. So it was just like, well, you basically only have like one song, and Angus Young's like, yeah, but it's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, who cares if they all sound the same? It's good. And it's, you know,
yeah,
they're not people always, this is kind of a tangent, but it always annoys me when people get really pretentious about music and talking about bands like AC/DC, where it's like, yeah, all their songs sound the same and it's only about, you know, sex and drinking and, you know, having a good time. It's like, okay, but they're not trying to pretend to be something that they're not. Like, they're not trying to pretend to be artistic or to be, you know, to write, you know, brilliant lyrics. It's like they're exactly who they are. They're being, you can like or dislike them who they are, but at least you can say that they're not, they're being authentic to themselves.
I would say that AC/DC and the Ramones have a lot in common that way, whereas both of them, you know, they both got basically their one sound that they just, you know, they didn't really want to move away from that too much, but also the fact that the lyrics that they wrote about were not meant to be like taken too seriously. They really had like these inside jokes, or even not even that inside jokes, where they just turned them into songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they're their own parody or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, they you know, I'm trying to think of a band that is sort of like artistic for just because it gets them brownie points. I can't think of any, but I'm sure they're out there.
Oh, I'm sure there's plenty of them out there. But well, think of any band that's considered pretentious. Bands like that are artistic for brownie points for the most part.
Yeah.
And you can always tell.
You can always tell. And you know, it's like there's just something about them that you can tell. It's like, dude, you're not even,
they sound like they're trying too hard.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I can't think of any specific examples. I mean, the first band that comes to mind, and I don't know enough about them, but the first band that comes to mind is Radiohead.
Oh yeah. But I actually kind of like some of the stuff they do too.
I do too, but they tend to take themselves a little too seriously at times.
Probably.
You know,
I do kind of think it's fun when they kind of like write, and maybe it's just the way Tom York's brain works or something like that, but he likes writing like sort of other music within the other stuff. And when you go back and put them together, there's like other things in there and stuff. He just likes doing that whole hemi-sync sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's just something he likes to do. I don't necessarily think that's something like he's trying too hard or something like that. I honestly just think it's what he genuinely enjoys doing.
Yeah.
So,
well, I didn't want to throw Radiohead under the bus, but it's
the first thing.
Maybe it's more their fans. Maybe it's more their fans. Yeah,
that also has a lot to do with it sometimes. Sometimes fan, like band. Yeah, it's not the band I hate. It's their fans. Tool. There's lots of bands out there that, you know, they got their own thing going, and sometimes the fans run with it a little bit further than I think even the band intended.
Okay, so I just thought of someone who I can put into that category.
Okay.
Morrissey.
Oh, God. Yeah. And the thing is, I'm not even really against, the Smiths originally, but yeah, he became an insufferable asshole for sure.
Yeah. I was never a huge fan of the Smiths.
No.
They were always too depressing for me.
Yeah.
I like Johnny Marr. I think Johnny Marr is a good guitar player and I like his solo stuff, but I wasn't into the Smiths.
Yeah.
But you know, Morrissey is someone who, he doesn't seem to have a sense of humor about himself, and he takes himself way too seriously, and he takes everything too seriously.
Yes, and he doesn't have a sense of humor about a lot of other things either.
No, he's like, he's an asshole.
The poster boy for not being able to take a joke.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, no, he that's someone I can put into that category. The Morrissey and the Ramones are on the complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
In terms of how fun they are.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Having said all that, the next song is called Havana Affair, Going Down South. So I think that was about the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Maybe. It's I like the use of the cowbell on that one.
Yeah.
It's interesting how just adding that one extra little percussion thing sort of changes the mood of the song.
Yeah.
Gives it more of that island flavor, oddly enough.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's punk rock, South American style.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, no, other than that, it sounds like all the rest of the songs, but yeah, you're right. It's just that one little ingredient changes the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to say about the song.
No, I think we basically just nailed why this one's different than the others.
Exactly.
Cowbell.
Yeah.
Gotta have more cowbell.
Gotta have more cowbell. All right, so then the next song is called Listen to My Heart. I had a thought about that song, but I can't remember what I was going to say.
Damn.
Oh, that's what it was. As we actually got a bit of a guitar solo in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which is sort of unique for this album.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not something you expect to hear on a Ramones album. Of course, it was a very brief guitar solo.
Yeah, and it was the same riff over and over, but hey, that's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're still learning. Give them a break, man.
Yep.
Yeah, other than that, I don't have anything more to say. I mean, it's the same as all the rest of the songs, but that's like, why we love
it. Ooh, guitar solo, sort of.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. And it was kind of buried in the mix a little bit.
Yeah.
This is where my producer hat comes in. If I were mixing this, I would have mixed that a little higher, but
yeah,
I wasn't there.
Nope.
In 1976 at the mixing sessions. Anyway, I think I know this song. It's called 53rd and 3rd. Had a bit of a false ending there.
Yep.
Yeah. So this song is a little dark. Just reading on Wikipedia, it was written by Dee Dee Ramone.
Which is why he was singing in part of that.
Yeah. It's about a male prostitute waiting at the corner of 53rd Street and 3rd Avenue in Midtown Manhattan. When the prostitute gets a customer, he kills the customer with a razor to prove he's not a homosexual. So yeah, kind of a,
wow.
I guess it's true. That kind of thing would have happened in New York in the 70s. New York in the 70s was fucking dangerous. Like, it was bad in the 70s.
Yeah, but there were certain very, very rough areas in New York. Man, if you ever saw pictures of some of the slummier areas, it was like a war zone.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what happened. Like, and it seemed to be only the 70s where it was that bad. Like, it was always rough, but it was like, it seemed to, the roughness of New York seemed to hit a peak in the 70s mm-hmm. for some reason.
Yeah, even in the 80s, I mean, there was, it could still be rough in the 80s, but it was starting to, its turnaround.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely at its roughest in the 70s. It's just the slums were the slummiest, the gangs were the gangiest. Mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
Wasn't unusual to walk through certain parts of town and see burned out husks of cars. It almost looks like you could be walking through like Afghanistan or something like that. I've seen pictures. It's amazing how bad it was.
I don't know enough about the history of the city. I don't even know how it got that bad. Probably something to do with the municipal government not running things very well.
I mean, it's got something to do with it, but there's a lot of other things I don't know. I have to look more into it, but there's always lots of different reasons for it.
I think when you get that many people in one concentrated area, but you know,
it doesn't necessarily have to be that.
No, because New York's gotten better and it's
gotten bigger. You know,
it's gotten bigger too. Yeah. So I don't think, I don't know why. Cause, I was watching a documentary about the Son of Sam, who was a serial killer in New York in 1977. And there was actually, in 77, there was also a citywide power outage for like 24 hours. So it's like, okay, this serial killer is on the loose and there's no lights.
Yeah.
And it's at night. It's like, how much more scary can you get?
Well, let's hope you're at home.
Yeah, exactly. You know, people always told me, because of the music that I was interested, that you should have grown up in the 70s, but then I think about all the medical advancements that have happened, and the crime that used to happen a lot, and it's like, I think I'm okay growing up when I did, and just, you know, listening to the music.
Yeah, there's always a give and take there. I mean, I can listen to all of the music and appreciate all the art from those periods. It's not as fresh as it was at the time, but it can still be, you know, it's fresh to me at one point, you know, before it becomes just another thing in my rotation. But there's benefits to being around now. I mean, there's other
things. It's far from perfect.
It's far from perfect.
But it's a lot better than it used to be. That's for sure.
In some ways, yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh. And the other thing, too, is, you know, if you were living through the 60s and the 70s, you would have to wait for that music to come out. Whereas now, you can just listen to it whenever you want to.
For the most part, yeah. And even talking about things going on at the time. I mean, we know the stuff that happened at the time. When it was happening, you didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, after, you know, things like MLK was being shot. I mean, you're hearing about it, you think, well, that's really rough. Can you imagine being alive at the time and expecting great things from this guy and then just hearing about him getting assassinated? Yeah, 1960 was particularly bad. I mean, how many people that were expected to do great things got assassinated that year?
Well, there was Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, was Malcolm X.
I don't remember what year that was.
In 68?
I think it might have been a little later. I think it was like early 70s. I'm not 100% sure on that. Fred Hampton. That was a rough year. People think that, you know, 1968 was like the bummiest year to be a progressive.
I would not want to live through that. And then you had like the Kent State the late 60s and early 70s was, and if you're in the United States, they still had the draft to deal with. It's like, no thanks.
Yep.
No.
Pass. Hard pass. I'll take the music, but I'll leave a lot of the other stuff. Might even take some of the fashion.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
But the culture at the time, no thanks. Anyway, we've got a few songs left. The next one, I think, is, I read it's a cover of, what's the name? Chris Montez, who's a musician. I've never heard of him.
Yep.
But I guess this is a cover of his song called Let's Dance. Well, that was a very... I'm curious to hear the original now to see how well it fits in with the Ramones sound.
Hmm.
And how much they changed it.
I like the harmonica there at the end. That was sort of an interesting sonic choice to put it the sort of wrap it up.
Yeah. I was not I would not expect the Ramones to have a harmonica in one of their songs.
I mean, again, it wasn't particularly fancy, but it was just another sound, the different, flavor to throw in the mix. It was kind of neat. I'd be very curious to hear the original song too, because that's, I'm guessing it's probably some sort of like, 60s dance track that they did. And we were talking about earlier how stuff like that can pretty easily be, we were talking about how they're, when they're singing the melodies sound very much like 60s pop songs. So really thinking about a lot of like music like that, 60s pop songs and dance tracks could probably be very easily converted to a Ramones-style punk track. So,
yeah.
And this is probably a perfect example of that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it fits in perfectly. Apparently this song was also done by the band Slade.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wonder if they maybe heard that version and
maybe
and did it.
Like to find that one too. I'm sure their version is a little more again, it'd be more like glam rock or something like that.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So we've got two more songs left. The second to last song is called I Don't Want to Walk Around With You.
All right.
Another thing they don't want to do.
Yeah. And they want to do it in the basement.
Sorry, what were you saying?
And they certainly don't want to do it in the basement.
No. but they will sniff glue. I think that actually might be my favorite song on the album.
Okay.
I don't know. I just like the over exaggerated, like, temper tantrum of a lyric of the sing vocal style.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to walk. And then the back. Ew.
I was just thinking as that song's playing that like someone should do like a flow chart or a Venn diagram or something like that of things like the Ramones. Things the Ramones want to do and things the Ramones don't want to do.
Yeah.
So just go over all their albums. I want to walk around with you. I don't want to walk around with you. Around. I don't want to go to the basement. I want to be your boyfriend. I want to be sedated. I want to sniff glue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have... they have other songs too. Like there's Judy. They have on, I think the third song on this album is Judy is a Punk.
Yep.
So they also have another song called Sheena is a Punk Rocker.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think I would like to see Judy and Sheena battle it out because, well, one of them is a punk and the other one is a punk rocker.
Oh.
So.
How could they ever get along?
I don't know. They need to defend their title.
Yeah.
It's a battle to the death. and then the other thing, that song had another guitar solo, this time higher on the neck, which was getting a little fancy,
getting along the dusty end of the fretboard. All right.
They must be like, well, I'm like Jimi Hendrix now.
It's just like, this feels a little unnatural at this end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like the chorus better. Getting out of his comfort zone. No, it's too high. I don't like it.
Sorry, Ramones. I know we're kind of taking the piss out of you at the moment. Yeah. Don't mean to.
We still love you.
Yeah.
So this, we've arrived at the last song on the album, and this is called Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World. Cool.
Cue the Dead Kennedys, Nazi punks, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's, it's funny. It's the people, I know there were Nazi punks,
yes,
but the Ramones definitely.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I think this is an anti-Nazi song actually. And, even though it is, written from the perspective, I'm just reading, written from the perspective of a Hitler Youth member. I think it's just a joke. I think it's
not to be taken too seriously.
Exactly. Yeah. Although it is interesting. So I guess one of the guys at the record company complained about the lyrics, and they had to change it, to something a little less offensive. I think they repeated the word Nazi more in the original lyric. this is a little less
Third Reich-y.
This is the tame version of that. So, overall, I think I enjoyed the album. There were a few surprises that it wasn't just, the same, three chords over and over again. But like I said earlier, even in that, even if all the songs do, sound similar, that's okay. Cause it's, it's a sound that's unique to them.
Right.
But overall, I enjoyed the album. I like that, there's 14 songs on the album and the runtime of the album was only 29 minutes.
Yeah.
Like that's funny to me. Mm-hmm. I like that.
It might be a record of some sort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
World's shortest, longest album, or the longest, right, shortest album, or something like that.
Yeah. And their shows were like that too. They would play like 50 songs in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Ooh,
how many songs is that? It was like 105. What time is it? It's still only 7.
Yeah. Exactly. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I want to go and listen to more of the Ramones. I'm curious about some of their later stuff, because I'm not as familiar with the later stuff as I am with the earlier stuff. So I would like to expand my Ramones vocabulary, I guess.
Mm.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't have anything else to add.
No, I think it's the Ramones. There's not a whole lot to say about them.
No.
Just that, yeah, they're, you know, got that punk sound. They kind of were the quintessential punk band of the time in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, when most people think of the sound of punk, this is what they think of for a lot of in a lot of cases.
Yeah. If there's nothing else, I thank you for listening if you made it this far. You can check us out at polyphonicpress.com. You can drop us a line at polyphonicpressmusic@gmail.com. And if you want to help out the show, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/polyphonicpress. And I guess that's about it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.